I'm John Morgan.
And I'm Michael Polignano.
Welcome to this edition of Countercurrents Radio. This week, Greg Johnson was supposed to be here, but unfortunately he's having some computer problems. So it's just going to be Mike and I this week. And we're very honored to be speaking with the Golden One himself, Marcus Follin, who's been very well known as a YouTube personality. He's been making videos related to nationalism and identitarianism now for, I think it's at least 5 years ago when I first became aware of him. So we're going to find out more about how he got to be as big as he is today. So Marcus, thanks a lot for being here with us.
Hi, it's my pleasure. It's also an honor to be on the Countercurrents podcast.
So you're from Sweden. And yes. As everyone knows, Sweden is not exactly, shall we say, in the forefront of the nationalist counter-revolution in Europe. So can you tell us, when did you first sort of become aware of yourself as being, you know, on the right, of being a nationalist, as somebody concerned with the future of the European people and civilization? How did that begin for you?
I've always been a nationalist, and I didn't really have any particular awakening. It's just been a gradual process throughout ages, and I knew quite early on that something was deeply wrong with Sweden, and it was quite clear to see. And then the rest has just been an ascent to enlightenment, if I may be so bold to state it that way. So no particular red-pilling moment, but just a gradual process of coming to a bit more traditionalist viewpoint of life.
Well, how long have you been making the videos now? I first became aware of you maybe about 5 years ago now.
No, I haven't been at it for so long. I started making videos, the first English speaking ones, I think must have been 4 years ago, something like that.
Okay.
I've been consistently making politically oriented videos for maybe 3.5 years, something like that. It was more training and philosophy in the beginning, and then gradually it became more politics, especially since the migrant crisis of 2015. That was I'd always been a nationalist, even when I made more training related content, but as the migrant invasion ramped up, I decided to ramp up my political endeavors as well. So I'd say that where in the autumn of 2015 is where I really started to go deeper into to nationalism and traditionalism, etc.
Yes, yeah, I think that was a real catalyst for a lot of us when the migrant crisis began. But would you say that your nationalism and your bodybuilding kind of go together? Like, I know a very common theme in the videos of yours that I've seen is that you can't really be a true warrior for your people, and you can't really embody your civilization unless you actually, you know, embody it physically in yourself and in the way that you live your life. So did those two things kind of come up together for you?
Yeah, definitely. If we're talking about training philosophy, because those two things go quite quite well together, and it's like common themes there are that you are accountant to your own self, to your own work. The state can't come and give you good results in the gym. So it's very anti-leftist in that sense. And obviously classic virtues such as discipline and order and hierarchy to a certain extent. So it aligns quite well with traditionalism overall, I would say, whereas it's quite hard. And this is also something I have witnessed over all these years in regards to other individuals who train hard, and it doesn't have to be in the gym, it can be martial arts or something, and that's they usually have a more right-wing perspective of things, because having a leftist sort of worldview it can't really be, it can't go hand in hand with that sense of strive for something higher and that you're accountable to yourself for your results. So yeah, definitely I'd say that, the two, or the three, like traditionalism and bodybuilding then. And I don't mean the modern type of bodybuilding, which, you see at Mr. Olympia. I mean the more classic kind of bodybuilding, like a, so if you strive for the kind of aesthetics of a, Arno Brecker statue, or you want to look like a, like a Greek statue or something like that. So that is what I mean when I say bodybuilding in this sense. So they go quite well with classic right-wing themes and certain traditional values. And then obviously traditional values often go hand in hand with nationalism. So I would actually say that there is that, that step of, traditional values and right-wing values that comes as a link between the bodybuilding journey and nationalism, actually.
How long have you been a bodybuilder, and were you bodybuilding before or after you came to ideas about traditionalism and nationalism?
So a brief rundown of my athletic life, as it were, would be I played football when I was young. So that's what you call in America soccer, up until I was like 16 years of age. And then I trained some Thai boxing, and then I was in the army for a year from 19 to 20. And then I started going to the gym after that. I'm 28 now, by the way. And then I've trained a bit more martial arts over the last few years, but I've also kept it up in the gym. So maybe 8 years then.
I'm just curious. Have you found that other men in the bodybuilding community, do they tend to be more right-wing than the average population, or are they mostly apolitical, or what's your sense of that?
Yeah, definitely they are more right-wing. That is something I can say, definitely that they are. Then of course there's a lot of them that are apolitical, but the vast majority, if you go into a gym and you see a, you know, you can see on a guy if he's well trained, he's been at it for quite some time, there is a big chance that he is to the right of things. So yes, the answer to that question is definitely yes.
Well, I guess that kind of relates back to the ancient Greek idea that, you know, a healthy body is a healthy mind. So maybe what that indicates is that when you get your body into the condition it's supposed to be, and you just naturally gravitate towards those types of ideas.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, what was it, you've mentioned traditionalism. What sorts of influences, I don't just mean thinkers, although, of course, you know, if there were particular authors or thinkers who influenced you, or perhaps other bodybuilders or whatever, were there any sort of examples that inspired you when you first got interested in this world?
Not any particular individual. I will say that Countercurrents has been a great asset to my enlightenment journey. So that's really nice to be on the podcast as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's always, I read Countercurrents, probably the site I read the most on, and I've read the most on. So that's definitely great. And yeah, to answer the question about if there was any particular individual, there wasn't really, but it's more the perennial archetype of the hero who goes on a quest for something, the same sort of aesthetics, ancient Greek statues, etc., and kind of the virtues that go along with it. So it's more an archetype that I have modeled myself after rather than a particular individual. But then when it comes to thinkers, there isn't really one particular thinker there. I will mention that Julius Evola has obviously interesting thoughts, and something that I read only like 1.5 years ago, so it's quite recent in my enlightenment journey, as it were. And that is the spirit of race, which I found really interesting. The metaphysical quality of a person, because the materialism of perhaps national socialism, or when someone becomes too obsessed of the material and don't take into account the soul, the metaphysical quality of someone, you miss out on a lot. And I think if we are to strive to be really good individuals, we can't just look at the pure biological reality of things. Then again, I'm saying this as someone who I'm still a race realist and everything like that. It's just that when it comes to the self-improvement aspect, and this is obviously goes hand in hand with bodybuilding, strength training, and martial arts, because you constantly try to get better all the time. And then it's more interesting to talk about metaphysical qualities than just the qualities that you're born with, because you can't really improve them over your own lifetime.
Yeah, I think that's a very important point. Like, Spengler had the famous quote where he said, "Those who talk too much about race no longer have it in them." And I'm like you. I mean, I recognize that race is important, but there is a degree to which you have to say it's important, but it's not enough on its own. I mean, somebody can be 100% European in their genetic makeup, but if they're living, you know, basically like an animal, or like, you know, just like a typical modern degenerate, that person, that doesn't necessarily qualify them to be a good representative of our people. So I think that's a very important point.
Yeah, definitely. And it's so easy to explain this, just point at all these degenerates, as you say. Like, they obviously don't possess good a good soul, a good quality soul. So yeah, exactly like you say, race isn't enough. And this is perhaps at a later stage of the Enlightenment journey to realize these things. Race realism is obviously perhaps a hard pill for a lot of people to swallow. It was never a hard pill for me to swallow. It's always been kind of obvious that there is differences between races, so that wasn't really any enlightenment, but just the fact that many of these individuals who they perhaps argue on 4chan who has the best lineage and who is the more pure race, and they don't do anything to honor that lineage. I find that quite sad, to be honest. So if you have a more emphasis on the soul, or on the own self-improvement journey, we can have a better chance of winning this culture war, I would say, instead of just looking at our perfect genetic lineage or something like that.
Right. So. Yeah, I agree with that. Something I also remember from some of your videos that I saw a while ago was I always liked the fact that you always stress the fact that women have to be part of this outlook as well, and that even though we acknowledge the importance of traditional gender roles, at the same time, we don't want weak women being the ones who raise our children and you know, support our civilization. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of traditionalists, in my experience at least, they tend to view, like, they misunderstand the word traditionalism, and then they think that how the United States looked in the 50s, that is what we're striving for. That is traditionalism.
Right.
Like, that's to be all and end all of that. And it's, that's what I think. In my view, if we look at humanity's history, we obviously had a need for strong women. I don't think that a woman who lived 1500 years ago in Europe and was the mother of 6 children or 10 children, half of them died in some sort of disease, and she had to be to a large part responsible for the survival of them and be a good wife to her husband. I can't see that she was in any way, shape, or form a weak woman. So in my view, at least, it's actually a weak position from certain men that they don't want to hold women to a high standard. They just want women to be silent and be in the kitchen and be nothing more. For me personally, I want women to be great. I want women to be as strong as possible, because that's always been their historic duty. So yeah, definitely. I want women to strive for greatness as well. And that does not mean that they should compete with men in some sort of, I don't know, academia or, slaving away at a 9-to-5 job. But I'm still saying that women should strive for greatness within themselves.
Yeah, I agree with that. Absolutely. I think this is something that keeps coming up in our circles that I think is important, that, you know, we can acknowledge the importance of having distinctive gender roles without expecting that women are completely submissive, like in Islamic culture, something like that.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, we are different fundamentally from Arabs, for example, from people who adhere to Islam. It's not just that they have a religion that's sprung up from nowhere. I mean, their religion is suited to them as a people. And that's right for them. It's not right for us.
I agree. Yeah.
Then, like, when certain white individuals have this sort of, like, white Sharia. I mean, it was a fun meme for a few weeks, but I think some guys took it too far. And that is not how we view women, and that is not a good view of women either, because in my view, at least, European women have a lot of talent that can be utilized. It should not be shut down to just model ourselves after people who perhaps do not have the same sort of creative spirit. So, and mm-hmm. I say this as someone who definitely wants to go forward to more traditional gender roles, in the sense that a man and a woman can strive to new heights together. But if I'm looking at myself and what I want in a woman, I obviously want someone who can help me attain even higher levels of success and enlightenment. And a woman who doesn't have a drive upwards, who's just a... who doesn't want anything at all, who doesn't have a will of her own, she can't really help me along that path. So for me, I want a strong woman. And I don't mean a strong, independent feminist woman. I want a woman who I can join together as one and then strive upwards together with. So yeah, that's my view on the woman question.
Yeah, that makes completely logical sense to me. Mike?
In other words, it sounds like you're saying men and women should be complementary rather than competitive with one another.
Exactly, exactly.
Which is what feminism is going for, and really in a sense with this whole men's rights and men going their own way and all these other, you know, really cancerous movements that have affected male culture are about too. They kind of adopt this viewpoint that men and women are in competition with one another, which is, you know, very, very false and decadent.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Really two sides of the same coin, this feminism and the MGTOW movement. And I mean, the thing with MGTOW is that I understand, I also do what I can to combat degeneracy in the form of pornography, for example. I've made plenty of videos and I've always pushed quite hard against, like, okay, this porn industry is not good and it causes degeneracy. Same thing with feminism. I've always had a clear stance against that. But it feels like many of these men's rights activists and MGTOWs, they dislike women instead of just disliking the modern elements that makes women bad. So in my view, I like the perennial woman, the essence of a woman. Then I don't like feminism and degeneracy. So the things that are making the modern woman problematic in some regards. But these MGTOWs, sometimes when I haven't listened extremely much to them, but they tend to attack the nature of women. And I think that's a bit You're throwing the baby out with the bathwater, if I'm using that term correctly.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, if both men and women are going their own way, you know, men with MGTOW, women with feminism, we don't really have much of a future, do we?
Yeah.
No, our civilization would be yielded to the people who still do adhere to more traditional values, which is, you know, what we're already seeing. So, yeah, that doesn't seem like any kind of a solution. I think that's a real problem for our civilization, is how we balance individualism with the collective, because, you know, I lived in India for a few years when we were doing Arctos, and, I really could see that there's something unique about the European spirit, which I think is, you know, what's been called Faustian, that our individual will gives us the drive to overcome ourselves and to become greater. You don't see that to the same degree in Asian culture, because everything is about the community. So, you know, they don't have the same pressure to try to stand out from the crowd or to try to, you know, achieve a lot on their own. I don't want to sound like it's completely absent, but it's not emphasized nearly as strongly as it is in our culture. And it's understood in a different way. So I always feel like we've got to find sort of the middle ground between the radical individualism that we have in the West today, which is like, you know, screw everybody else. You know, I'm only gonna think about my own needs. And, you know, the extreme that the Asian culture goes to, where it's all about the group, which yeah. I think we had that like 50 years ago.
I think what we lack, and I blame this obviously on degeneracy and Hollywood culture and the sexual revolution and things like that. And I'd say that if we had some more shame, like shame culture, the individualism could still have its positive effects, so that someone wants to shine without shame. So someone wants to create something, a really beautiful work of art. I mean, that doesn't bring any shame to someone. But if someone makes something really shameful, that would have been shameful 50 years ago, but perhaps that is mainstream today because our society is so decadent. I might be wrong in this analysis, but I'd say that if we have a culture where shaming is still a large part, we can cut out a lot of the degenerate activities, perhaps, and still maintain that Faustian spirit, because obviously the Faustian spirit and the individualism within a social context is something we want to keep. Otherwise, we can't have our white space imperium if we don't have the pioneers to push forward the progress forward. But yeah, I made a video about this about a week ago in regards to individualism. And basically what I said there is that it's fine to be individualistic if it's still within a social context. So you can be individualistic as long as you, well, I mean, you should follow the law. Well, in a reasonable society, you should follow the law and you should follow certain social rules. So the social rules, perhaps they don't stipulate that you need to be exactly like everyone else, but you shouldn't do shameful behaviors. And if you have that sort of social dynamic, I think we can achieve greatness again.
Yeah, I think so as well. What's your feeling on the prospects for a true revival in Europe? I mean, I'm thinking of Sweden, and, you know, of course, for a while now, it's had the reputation of being the sort of the most cucked country in Europe. I'm actually not sure I agree with that. I think England might be worse in some ways, but it has certainly been very radically liberal for quite some time. But there have been some signs of health. Like, I know, you know, the Sweden Democrats are a lot more popular now than they were. There seems to be a very vital, a radical, you know, quote unquote, radical right, thriving in Sweden now. So what do you think of the prospects for Sweden and for Europe as a whole to, come back to itself?
Yeah. I've actually been wanting to make a video for a good while now elaborating on this situation. And the thing with Sweden is that it's, since we were the best in a lot of ways, like the closest to a perfect society. And then it turned into not as good anymore. So it's more the transformation that is horrific, but in the sense like we're still much better off than America or the UK or Germany or France, or Holland or Belgium, etc. So, I mean, we're still a really good country. It's just that it's taken a turn, for the worse, and the trajectory looking forward is, you know, going from a paradise 20, 30 years ago to a multicultural health project in, 10, 15 years. So it's a transformation that's a tragic case with Sweden. So it's not, we're not worse off than UK. We're not more cocked than UK or America or Germany or France, etc. So it kind of, like, obviously it's good that people look at Sweden and, shame Sweden to use the term again, because that puts pressure on Sweden to change. But it's not, I wouldn't say it's intellectually honest all times to point to Sweden all the time, because, compared to some of the other countries, it's, Sweden is in a much better position, being quite honest. I can say that actually. But still, we have a lot of work to do, obviously. But yeah, I have faith in Sweden, at least.
You have an election coming up this year, right?
Yes, we do. So in about 8 months.
What is your prediction for what we might see from that?
So the in 2010, the Sweden Democrats got roughly 6%, and then in 2014 they got roughly 13%, and I would guess that I might be a bit optimistic now, but it wouldn't surprise me in the least if they got well over 30%.
Wow, that would be fabulous.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I just need to say this as well, that the Sweden Democrats aren't, I mean, obviously in the eyes of the establishment, they're far right and everything like that. But ultimately, they're civic nationalists, at least outwards. They aren't really that radical. And they haven't really, I know some people in the party has suggested re-immigration, repatriation. But otherwise it's just a limitation of immigration. So, I mean, it's not like they will save Sweden, just based on their policies, but it's definitely a step in the right direction. So, I'm optimistic about that. And then, there is a new party coming along as well, which hopefully will gain 4%, and 4% is the limit. So if you gain over 4%, in the election, you get into the Riksdag, which is basically the parliament. So yeah, it will be very interesting. And the political climate in Sweden has been quite hot as of the last few years. A lot of formerly apolitical people have become quite, I don't want to say radicals, because I mean, our position aren't really radical, but yeah.
What is this new party that might get 4%, and what is their platform? What are they fighting for?
So they're going to be called Alternative for Sweden, and they're basically a their platform is mainly nationalistic policies, a bit more right wing in their economic policies than the Sweden Democrat. So to break it down, historically, we have had the Social Democrats, which basically ruled Sweden on and off for the last 100 years. And they are, yeah, as the name suggests, a bit more left wing. And then we've had the right wing, and the right wing in the historic context is then called the moderates. So that would be like conservatives in America. That would be their equivalent. So anyway, so if the Sweden Democrats are replacing the Social Democrats, except that they have a tinge of nationalism in them, the Alternative for Sweden can be seen as a replacement for the old conservatives, except with a tinge of nationalism.
Oh, that would be fantastic. Well, it's like with Trump in the U.S. I mean, some people like to dwell on the negative points, but we have to work with what we have. So, you know, I certainly hope that the Sweden Democrats do quite well, even if it's not the final, you know, it's not everything that we need.
But, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I supported Trump 100% up to the election, and I'm extremely happy that he got elected. It was a really nice sensation waking up the next day and
yes,
and that, so it was awesome. And I mean, I view this entire struggle as a tug of war. We pull the Overton window in our direction, and each step in our direction is a victory. Yeah, it's going to take small steps along the way, little progression day by day. So I'm not waiting for Prince Charming to come and save the day. It's just a grind and a struggle. So I hope all the best for the Sweden Democrats as well, even if we don't agree on exactly everything.
Right.
Greg Johnson advanced the idea that what we need is kind of a hegemony, kind of this understanding that to be for your people and to be, you know, have pride in your history, your traditions and your culture is something that really should be shared between the political left and the political right. That this is something that used to be the case. It was taken for granted that if you were a leftist or a rightist, you were kind of for your own people. And that's just been lost really ever since World War II. And so pushing the Overton window, you know, even if there are, you know, differences between parties and whatnot that are minor, as long as, you know, the idea is getting out there that it's good and correct to be for your people and to support your own, which doesn't mean being against others necessarily, but it does mean setting boundaries, which most nations have been, or most Western nations have been completely unable to set. That's a good thing.
Definitely, definitely. I agree. And I usually look at what the leftists did all over the West, and perhaps particularly hard in Sweden, as in Sweden has always been quite prone to extremism. And during the 60s, obviously, when the cultural Marxist wave hit the universities of all over the West, they marched through that institution to the point where both leftists and rightists, and I mean rightists in the conservative sense here, both came to agree upon the fact that being proud of being Swedish, for example, was something wrong, always wrong. And I mean, if we can do the same thing, march through the institutions so that no matter your economic principles, you still agree that it's good to look out for your own people. So basically we have the blueprint because the leftists, the cultural Marxists, set it out for us 40 years ago. So if we can do the same thing, we don't really need to have any party at this particular moment that is 100% on our side, as long as we can change the metapolitical landscape to the point where every party agrees anyway that that it's a good thing. Now, obviously, there's a bit problematic with the demographic change, of course, which the leftists didn't have to deal with when they made their conquest of the institutions. But it's a good guideline, at least.
Well, can I ask you, because I've asked other Swedes about this, and I get different answers from people, but why do you think it is that Sweden ended up being the country that got the reputation for being so radically liberal, rather than any other Western country?
It's a quality of, not a good quality in this sense, but it's something within the Swedish soul. And I think to a large extent in the soul of many Europeans, but I'd say that in Swedes in particular, it's an urge to want to be the best, or the most extreme, or the most at the forefront of all things. So if we look at Sweden during the early 1900s, Germany usually get the blame for having been the most advanced in racial science, etc. But Sweden was actually first in those sort of endeavors. And there is this recurring theme in in Swedish history. During the Viking ages was perhaps who could go on the most daring adventure and sail out to sea, or who could explore the furthest away land or something. And then during the 1700s, it was perhaps being completely fanatical in battle. So like we had this tactics, the Carolians had a tactic where they basically advanced through the storm of bullets from the enemy so that they could get closer to the enemy before attacking themselves. So, and then obviously when we got to the 1900s, very extreme in the non-politically correct sense. And then when the trend turned towards cultural Marxism, we wanted to be the most extreme there. So I'd say that it is a large part, at least, something in the Swedish soul that wants us to be the most extreme at all times.
The cutting edge, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I want to be at the forefront of everything. I want to be the most, forefront. So that is one analysis. And then obviously we can take into consideration the wealth. We had the luxury, since we were so well off economically, we could afford to do a lot of stupid things. We could afford to do away with a lot of traditions because there wasn't really a need for them. So to a certain extent, a strong police, for example, since we were such a law-abiding society, since we'd progressed so far. And now obviously that's a bad thing, because now we would need a bit tougher measures. And also in regards to the state taking care of people, we had a luxury to do that, and that luxury made us less cautious in our spending. So that's another aspect, but I'd still say that it's something within the Swedish mentality that is prone to radicalism and extremism.
That's interesting. So it's kind of a reverse of the berserker spirit somehow.
Yeah. Yeah, or rather a reverse of the of our endeavors in the early 1900s, because we had quite, like talking about eugenics, for example, we had sterilized people because they were unfitting as parents, etc. So we had quite a dark past, as a leftist would call it. So I'd say that the cultural Marxism also a response to that. Just as Germany has, to a certain extent, the same thing. They're trying to atone for perceived sins during Second World War, so then they had to show how tolerant they are. Same sort of thing with Sweden. So I'd say it's a backlash from a previous era.
Yeah, it was a similar story in the U.S. You know, we also had the eugenics movement, and of course, all the racial strife in the 20th century. And I feel like our cultural Marxism and liberalism has sort of been a backlash to that.
Yeah. I mean, it's quite similar. The story in a lot of Western societies, you can take Australia for example as well. I know they have sort of the same narrative that they were mean and now they have to make up for it.
Yes.
And I mean the people, Australians, white Americans, Germans, British people, Swedish people, we are similar enough that when I say that Swedes are prone to extremism, that obviously goes for many Americans and many Australians as well. So it's not that Swedes are extremely unique. It's just that Swedes are, well, the most Swedish of all, but everyone is a bit Swedish or European, if that makes sense. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's, there are certain qualities that unite our civilization. I get this from leftists or even conservatives sometimes who will come to me and say, well, you know, but how can you talk about this European identity when, you know, 100 years ago, you know, you were all slaughtering each other? And, you know, and now you're saying that you're all like one people. It's like, well, not one people, but there are certain common factors that unite us. And I think that's, yeah, you just pinpointed one. It's, yeah, even in its negative aspects, this sort of radical liberalism, I think it is a manifestation of this Faustian spirit, just a negative one.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really fine quality that's been corrupted by decades of brainwashing. So, and it's very sad. It's very sad to see a lot of potential being wasted in such a way. And that's actually truly something that can make me a bit sad when I think about, like, from an perhaps an environmentalist perspective, how Mother Nature is, like our planet, isn't really faring all too well at the moment. And I know for a fact that if Sweden, for example, or any European or Western nation, if we just spent more time and energy and money on trying to work out solutions for, I don't know, the pollution of the seas or the deforestation of jungles. I mean, all of these sort of things. If we had, instead of wasting all of that money and time and energy on trying to replace ourselves as a people, if we spent that on science instead.
Yes.
I mean, I know Mother Nature would thank us at least. And that is something that makes me so, yeah, it makes me sad, to be honest, to think about it. All this sort of potential that just has been wasted because there wasn't enough funding, for example, or perhaps the scientists who could perhaps have come up with this revolutionary technology to recycle plastic bottles in the ocean, perhaps he got stabbed to death in a multicultural area, or he was blown up in a terrorist attack. So I mean, that's if you think about it like that, the potential that is potentially lost, it's a bit sad, but it is what it is.
Or he's too busy. You know, the person who would have discovered one of those things is too busy, you know, figuring out how to develop housing projects for refugees or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Or perhaps it's completely trapped by the luxuries of the modern world. Access to a nice sofa, Netflix account, all the porn in the world, all the good food in the world, I mean, you're quite content. So you need a quite strong Faustian spirit to overcome yourself in that regard. And then obviously with all types of drugs, etc. That's also another topic that's quite interesting to elaborate on. I mean, there is in the European peoples, so much creativity, so much intelligence, so much potential. And I just hate to know that perhaps there is a guy in America or in Britain or in Germany or in Sweden who perhaps has that fire to really come up with something unique in whatever field it might be. It might be chemistry or biology or something. But then instead of having that Faustian spirit just thriving within him, he is so dulled by drugs or alcohol, for example. So that Faustian spirit isn't allowed to grow through him. And that's, that's sad. But that's why we need a cultural revolution, so we place a value in this sort of quest for something higher again.
Well, what is your view on that, since you're somebody who's so concerned with the body as well as the mind? Do you think drugs or alcohol can have any place in somebody's life, or do you think a truly healthy person should just forgo them altogether?
So my view on alcohol is that I drink alcohol as part of when it's appropriate, but I never get drunk. I haven't been drunk in 6.5 years it is now, I think. So yeah, and that was just, it wasn't anything bad that happened. It was just that I thought this was an unnecessary thing to do. So then I just decided to not get drunk again. But there is, like as a cultural aspect of European civilization, obviously, I wouldn't want a world without wine, for example, or I wouldn't want a world without beer. So whenever I'm in Germany, I'll have some sort of Weiss beer or something like that. If I'm in Ireland, I will have a pint of Guinness because it is part of the cultural experience. And same thing, it can be nice with a glass of wine to have once in a while. So I'm not a or perhaps a mead.
Oh yes, I love it.
That's really nice. So I mean, it is. I'm not an absolutist in that regard. I'm just I don't endorse drunkenness.
I see.
So in moderation at appropriate times, I can drink alcohol. In regard to drugs, it is I don't know enough yet about psychedelics. I get asked quite often actually about my thoughts on that, but I have to read up more on that before I can make a statement. But generally, if I have like a general guideline on drugs, it's if it's just to get high, get a rush from it, then I'm not for that at all. But if it serves a higher purpose, so if you perhaps want to take some sort of psychedelics to attain a new realization, get a new perspective, enhance your vision, I haven't taken any psychedelics, so I can't speak from experience, but that is just my moral perspective upon it. Like if it's in congruence with something higher and you do it for a higher purpose, then I'm all for it if it goes in line with that.
Yeah, that was, well, though, for example, Avila, who we mentioned earlier, that was his philosophy. He actually wrote somewhere or other that the thing that first introduced him to the idea that tradition was a reality was taking psychedelic mushrooms. And, you know, he certainly wasn't somebody who then went and became decadent. I mean, he used it and then moved on.
Yeah, definitely an excellent example. So yeah, in those sort of contexts, absolutely fine. I just got reminded that Black Pigeon Speaks made a video about LSD about 1.5 years ago or something like that.
Oh, and I haven't seen that.
All right, yeah, no, it's quite good actually. It brought me a new perspective of things as well. But yeah, like in that sort of context, definitely for it. But if it's just like to get high or something, I don't endorse it at all.
Right. Or also, I think there are certain drugs that just don't have any positive side. Like, you know, I call them the nihilistic drugs, things like cocaine or heroin. I mean, they don't really do anything positive for you. They just, you know, they might make you feel good for a little while and then, you know, but the damage to your body and your mind is takes its toll. So,
yeah,
I think we have to separate those from the psychedelics.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
But something I was curious is that there might be a few people listening to this who might be interested into getting into bodybuilding or maybe already are. But I think most people are probably more like me, where I try to remain active and I try to take good care of my body. But I recognize, I mean, in the caste system, I'm more of a Brahmana. So yeah. I'm probably never going to get as huge as you. I'm happy doing my work and so forth. But I do want to keep my body in good condition, and I do, acknowledge, like you say, that, you know, they have to go hand in hand, the body and the soul. So what do you recommend to people who aren't necessarily trying to get big, but who are just trying to take care of themselves and be, you know, worthy of being a representative for their people? But there are just some general guidelines of either physically or in terms of behavior that you offer people in that situation?
Yeah, something I could recommend to everyone basically. It's just a to go on a walk on a daily basis, and then you can listen to. I used to listen to podcasts when I was out walking. So I usually walk. I don't do it every day during the winter, but I do it basically every day during the summer and spring, unless I am occupied with something else. But I try to get in at least one walk about an hour each day. If I can do it in the forest or something, it's even better. And then you can, you don't have to make it in a brisk pace either. You can just be, you know, a reasonable enough pace, and you can either have a podcast on, I used to do that. Now I mainly focus on my own thoughts because I try to, meditate basically. So, but that is a great way to just, activate yourself without any, like, you can just go out, walk for an hour, and then that's that. So it's really simple and easy way to stimulate the body. And especially since everyone is, many of us are sitting quite a lot. So it's good to just get out, off a sitting position and then, stimulate the body a bit, get a bit of fresh air and, that would be the, if someone is just looking out for something, to incorporate in their daily lives without wanting to, take everything at once, I could definitely recommend a walk a day. And then when it comes to the diet itself, because a large part obviously in, at least if someone wants to maintain a weight and not gain weight, it's to look out for the diet. And an easy way to cut down on calories is to not drink anything with calories in it. So basically you only drink coffee, tea and water.
That's basically what I do.
All right, perfect. Yeah. So because calories are so easy to get in if you drink them. So if you drink milk or juice, for example, it's an easy way to get in calories. And this works the other way around if you're trying to gain weight. If you're trying to gain weight, you can drink a lot of your calories because it's easy to get into you. And if you're trying to lose weight or if you're trying to maintain weight, you can aim at not drinking the calories.
What about sleep? What's your attitude on that?
The optimal scenario is to try to get 8 hours of sleep, but that's it's not something I usually get. I wish I could, but sometimes it's it's just that the schedule calls for a little less sleep, so you can fit in more things during the day. But if there is an option, definitely try to sleep 8 hours a day.
But do you think walking is very good? I know I also try to incorporate walking into my daily life. But do you think that's enough on its own? Don't you think you need to? I mean, you know better than me, but I'm just curious. Wouldn't you want to exert yourself something, you know, kind of push your body to kind of get it going on occasion?
Yeah, definitely. The walking, to incorporate that, that's just if someone just wants something easy to incorporate. But if I could, otherwise I obviously recommend training in the gym for various health reasons as well. If not that, a martial art is always good to train. More generally, I always recommend the gym, strength training, because it's so many positive health benefits. Definitely recommend that.
Okay. Well, we've been going for almost an hour, but I did, before we kind of wrap up here, I wanted to ask you about the other projects you're engaged in. Like, we were talking before we started recording about your clothing line, which you said is actually sold out right now.
Yeah, most of the garments are sold out in the popular sizes, at least. So size medium and size large are sold out, but we're having a restock hopefully next week. So it's all good. So I have a clothing line made in Europe and with traditional motifs. So a lot of fleur-de-lis.
Oh, great!
Yeah, so I'm trying to have the clothing line go hand in hand with my own outlook of life, basically.
What's the name of it so people can find it?
Legiogloria.com.
Oh, great. Good name.
Oh, thank you.
What else do you have sort of coming up on the horizon or that you're doing right now?
I'm having a supplement company. Gonna launch that in approximately a month or so. I've just gotten in some testing with the flavors, etc., and it's looking to be extremely good. So I'm looking forward to that quite a lot.
And I think you're scheduled to be at American Renaissance coming up in a couple of months, right?
Yes.
Have you been to America before?
Yes, I've been twice. So in 2011, first time I was in the West Coast, and 2014 I was in Missouri.
Oh wow! I've never even been to Missouri. What was your impression of that?
Yeah, it was nice. Nice in a nature kind of way. It wasn't much in terms of architecture, etc., but nice enough anyway.
Mm-hmm. Is this your first American Renaissance?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you should find that interesting. I think Jared's a great guy. I wish he could be the president, but he's chosen to be an activist instead.
Yeah, it would be really cool to have him as a president. Or if he wants to come over to Sweden, he can be our state minister.
I think he is supposed to come over for something soon. I can't remember exactly, but I think there's an event coming up in Stockholm.
All right, cool.
He's supposed to be at. But do you have any other public appearances coming up?
No, I don't think. We'll probably make some more public appearances, but I haven't booked anything. I will have to consult my calendar later. I don't have it on top of my head.
Okay, well, you could always message it to us, and we could add it to the description if you want us to add that in. Okay.
How did you come up with the name, The Golden One? Is there any special significance to it?
I just wanted the most epic and glorious title there was.
Okay.
So that's the reasoning behind it. I just wanted to, what sounded the coolest and most epic. And then obviously I had to live up to the name as well. So I had to push myself quite hard to to do that. So yeah, that's the story behind the name.
That's a good motivator. I remember you used to also start your videos with Hail Sons of Rome.
Yeah.
Is that a reference to something specific or just...
No, it's... when I say Sons of Rome, it's a... it's like saying Sons of the West, basically. So it's not Rome as in the Roman Empire necessary. It can be the Holy Roman Empire. It can be the Byzantine Empire. But it's more generally Men of the West. So I say that sometimes, well, greetings, Men of the West, or Sons of Macedon. And Macedon obviously is a representation of the West. And so it's, it's in a broader term, I use the term like Imperium as well. Imperium. So that's obviously, all over the West. So whenever I say Rome, I also mean Canada, the USA, Australia, etc.
No, we're all sort of cultural sons of Rome. So yeah, I think that's...
Yeah, exactly, fair. Exactly.
Have you always been more extroverted, more the sort of person to put yourself out there? Or was it challenging yourself to go out and put yourself on YouTube and get this whole channel started and everything like that?
No, I think I'm actually more introverted, to be honest, but I always liked the attention, so it wasn't any problem to do that.
Yeah, I think we all like attention, so.
Yeah.
Have you ever taken one of those Myers-Briggs tests, or?
No, but I think I discussed it with some of my friends, and we concluded that I was an INTG.
Oh, INTJ?
Yeah.
From what I've heard, a lot of people on the right fall into that.
Yeah.
So yeah, but yeah, the I makes sense based on what you're saying. Well, Mike, was there anything else you wanted to ask him?
Nope. I think that's pretty much it.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot for joining us, Marcus. I think that was a really interesting conversation, and I hope you'll join us again sometime.
Yeah, it was absolutely my pleasure and definitely, yeah.
All right. We'll see you all later.
Take care, everyone. It was really great chatting with you, Marcus.
Thank you.